Welcome to the Erickson Covenant podcast. We are so glad that you've joined us today. We confess that we don't have all the answers, but as a community, we seek to find and follow Jesus and to discover daily the life he has always wanted for us. We hope this message will be encouraging and will inspire you to take the next steps on your spiritual journey. If we can help you in any way, please connect with us. The easiest way is through our website at ericksoncovenant.ca. Let's get started.
Well, good morning once again. And to those of you online as well, good morning. Great to see you. A couple months ago, Tom called me and said, we're doing this series on humility. And he said, I'd like you to tackle the topic of humility and leadership. Now, he didn't say, I'm doing this because you're humble. So he didn't mention that at all. That would really ruin this whole thing. We could just say the benediction and go home if that's why I'm here. But it was because he felt maybe my insights on leadership would be helpful. And then somehow to figure out this matter of humility and how it relates to leadership. So we're facing some problems this morning. And the one is a broad general problem. And that is, for the most part, our ideas on leadership are these days, I'm going to be honest with you, quite confusing. I've studied leadership for 30 years. I've been involved in leadership, but I've studied leadership for 30 plus years. And when you look at the field of leadership as a social science, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. And that is that as a social science, leadership is a total mess. Okay? There are right now probably 2,000 different definitions of leadership. That is not helpful. There are scores and scores of models on what it means to lead. That's not helpful. It's actually quite confusing. So in a general way, there's a problem. What is leadership? How are we to understand what leadership is, let alone humble leadership? Through the years, I have taken time to sort of keep a sense of some of the things that are pouring out on leadership. It's a multi-billion dollar industry now. It is also an industry that is pouring out every year hundreds of new titles, new books. When I teach on leadership, and I've taught it at a master's level, and every year with a group of people for a week, we take time to just look at the matter of leadership. I begin with this issue of navigating the maze. Making our way through the leadership field is like going into one of those mazes where the hedges are around you. And once you're inside a few steps, you look around and say, I have no idea where I am. And that's what the leadership field is about. And so through the years, I have kept my own kind of reference of some of the books that have been written on leadership. So I'm just going to give you, I've got the receipts here. Right now, it's running two pages of books on leadership that have a word in front of the word leadership. And it's people writing books saying, here is how you get your hands around leadership. So here's some of the titles. There's one book called High Altitude Leadership. And some of you say, I don't like that because I don't like heights. Well, there's other books called entitled Everyday Leadership. So that gets you down at ground level. So take heart. Don't worry about high altitude. Read Everyday Leadership. There's a book, Charismatic Leadership. But there's also a book called Quiet Leadership. So if you don't like the charismatic idea, then get the book on quiet leadership. There's a book on hardwired leadership. There's also a book called Liquid Leadership. Do not read hardwired leadership and liquid leadership together because you will get electrocuted. So when you then begin to look at other titles, there is a book entitled Fierce Leadership. But there's also a book called Calm Leadership. So, you know, it really depends on what mood you're in, which book you'll pick up. There is a book entitled, there is one book on humble leadership, by the way, by Edgar Schein. It's actually a very, very good book. It's the only one, there's only one or two books that are entitled Humble Leadership. We're going to look at that in a bit, but Edgar Schein's book is actually a very good book. And the only reason he gets away with writing it and selling it is because of he's known worldwide. So people would go, oh, it's Edgar Schein. I'll read that. But if it was by someone else, no one would read it. There's also a book entitled Motion Leadership. But there's another book called Still Leadership. So you can have motion leadership or still leadership. You see, you get the drift? This idea that the field of leadership is a total mess because we're getting all of this input about what leadership is, and we end up like we're in a maze. We don't know which way to go, where to turn, and most of our ideas are shaped by these kind of books. I'll just do a fast run through some of them. There is a book called Christ-Centered Leadership. That's a good book. Servant Leadership, Courageous Leadership, Compassionate Leadership, Energy Leadership, Enlightened Leadership, Fearless Leadership, Fusion Leadership, Global Leadership, Local Leadership. So if you're sort of, you don't like global ideas, Local Leadership, Great Leadership, Bad Leadership. There is a book on bad leadership. There's No Nonsense Leadership, No Excuse Leadership, Outdoor Leadership, for those of you who like to be outdoors. Outdoor Leadership. Positive leadership, powerful leadership, product leadership, real leadership, because you might think none of these things are real, so this book is real. I'm thinking of writing a book entitled Tired Leadership, What Happens When We Have Too Many Books on Leadership. But you get the idea that we live in a world where we've got all kinds of content coming at us about what leadership is, and really the field is a mess. I think it's Warren Bennis who said a number of years ago, never has so much been written on a topic that so few seem to really understand. And so the industry continues just to churn away with more and more. And a lot of our thoughts and ideas and practice of leadership get shaped by a lot of these things. And we try them out and we wonder, why is it that we're just simply going round and round spending more and more time and money on leadership development? By the way, there's surveys that have been done of managers and those who spend a lot of money helping their people get trained in leadership. One survey indicated that 85% of managers said, all the money we spend on so-called leadership development, we might as well take the money and burn it. It really is not helping. We still have a leadership problem. We still have a leadership crisis. So we want to get into the issue then, what are we then to do about the matter of wrestling with what leadership is really all about? I'm going to give you a definition of leadership by John Maxwell. Some of you know John Maxwell, a Christian leader for many years, taught widely. And he simply put it this way, that leadership is influence. Now that's a very, very short, simple definition, but this is where Edgar Schein is helpful, because Edgar Schein says that leadership certainly is influence through relationships that nurture openness and trust. That's how he defines humble leadership. Humble leadership is people, wherever they are found, influencing through relationship with others, nurturing openness and trust. So that's a good definition that's current, contemporary, from Edgar Schein. So we're going to look at the matter of leadership as influence. And I mentioned that we have a general problem with leadership. We also have a very personal individual problem with this topic of humility in leadership. The personal problem, an individual challenge, is that most of us, when we see a title like that, humility is leadership, we think, there's someone who needs to hear this. I have a boss, I have a manager, I'm part of a company. And the owner of the company, boy, he or she, they sure need to hear this. And we do what we call in the preaching school, that sometimes we come to church with our baling fork in hand, and we've got a topic, and we put our fork into it, and we throw it over our shoulder, and we say, someone else really needs to hear this. So there's a bit of a personal individual challenge with this. The other challenge is that the word leadership is a word that most of us say, well, I'm not a leader. So it doesn't really apply to me because I'm not a leader. So we need to look at the word leadership and realize that the early word, many years ago, in the origin of the word leader simply meant to go forth. So in the living of your life on a daily basis, do you go forth? Yeah. We all go forth. This is where it's influence. It's not tied to position, title, authority, which is what we've done with leadership. That's why we dismiss ourselves from this topic and say this really doesn't relate to me because I'm not a leader at the top. I'm not a leader who's a manager, a boss, an owner. I'm just one of the people. I'm one of the people on the bus. And we have this idea that we're all on a bus in our organizations, our teams, our businesses, and the leader is the driver. He's got the steering wheel, he's got the brake, he's got the gas pedal, and we're just sitting, we're passengers. We're along for the ride, and we just every so often from the back will say, are we there yet? You know, the kind of things we know as we travel, even as families, are we there yet? Or the you know, the leader's up front driving the bus, and he hears someone in the back say, he's touching me, you know, she's touching me. And the driver will, sometimes will say, don't make me come back there. Don't make me stop this bus. And we tend to think the leader is the one driving. We are the ones as passengers who go along for the ride. So the leader influences. But we need to realize that certainly leaders do influence who have position, title. But those of us who are part of any enterprise, any business, any organization, any group of people who are seeking to do good in the world, we also have influence. We have leadership in a sense that we also must be going forth. We also must realize that we have an influence without authority, without maybe a title, without perhaps a position, but we have influence. The greatest organizations, the greatest businesses are businesses where there's a density within those organizations of all people, of the people who say, we understand we're all here and we all have influence. We all go forth. There may be a leader at the head who leads us, but we have influence. So let's take some time then to ask the question, how then are we to influence? Mark chapter 9, we had read for us Mark chapter 10, but Mark chapter 9 is interesting. These are events in the gospel record just prior to the final week of Jesus' life. And it's intriguing to note the disciples and what they're thinking about. Mark chapter 9 tells us they came to Capernaum. This is just following the point where Jesus said to his disciples, the Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men. I'm going to be crucified. I'm going to die. They come to Capernaum, and when he's in the house, he then gathers the fellows around, and he asks them, what were you talking about on the road? But they kept quiet. No one wanted to say a word, because they were arguing about who was the greatest. So, sitting down, Jesus called the 12, and he said, if anyone wants to be first, he must be the very last and the servant of all. Then he brings a little child in their presence, sets the child in their midst, and says, when you welcome one of these little children in my name, you welcome me. There's another event in Mark chapter 10 where, once again, children come to Jesus. It's interesting just to note what Jesus is doing with his disciples. He's seeking to reshape, reframe, and turn around. Thank you. Turn around their thinking on what it means to be in their world. Because they have ideas that have been shaped by their world. And they're arguing together just after he's told them, I'm going to die. They're arguing about who's the greatest. You got 12 angry men who are just going at each other, trying to vie for who's the best, who's the greatest. That is not humility, by the way. That's the furthest thing from humility. And so in Mark chapter 10, we have the passage read for us earlier, is that James and John come to Jesus and they say, we want you to do something for us. He's just told them just a day earlier or so earlier, if anyone wants to be first, you must be the servant of all. And they say, what do you want me to do for you? Jesus asks. Let us sit at your right hand and the other at your left in your glory. They're still enamored by the idea that for them, they want to be at the side of Jesus in his glory. They're vying for position. Now, the others hear this, and they were indignant with James and John. Once again, they're angry. Probably because they didn't think of it. And so they didn't get to the post. They didn't get to the place where they could say, Jesus, maybe you could consider me. Now, this is intriguing because what is on their mind is who is in the top position. Who is in the lead? Because in their world, the lead position is the important position. That's where you want to be. You don't want to be down here. You want to be up here. So the question on Jesus' mind is not who is in the top position, but rather who is in the right posture, because Jesus says this. You know what that those who are the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them. High officials exercise authority. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great must become your servant. Jesus doesn't care about position. He wants to know what is the posture of your heart. The disciples, and in fact, Jesus had grown up in a world of control, command, leadership. Arrogant, proud leadership. The rulers of the Gentiles. Jesus grew up in Nazareth, part of the Roman Empire. As a young boy, Caesar Augustus was the emperor. He died in 14 AD, but not before he had taken time to write a book entitled The Achievements of the Divine Augustus. He wrote it about himself, 2,500 words. He said, this is to be put on bronze plates, put outside my mausoleum. He had it published for everyone in the empire. 2,500 words. And it simply gave all the things, the rare glimpse into the mindset that valued public honor and position virtually over everything else. It's cringeworthy. It was self-congratulation at the highest level. And it was simply his way of taking us through 35 key areas of his life and his achievements. Military victories, public awards, gifts to the city as their own expense, building projects, civic games, and so on. And Jesus is saying, you've been given a map by your culture, and that is that control and command and arrogance and ego must be protected. You've got to lift yourself up. If you're going to get anywhere, power is not an abundant resource. You need to go for the ring. You've got to get a hold of power, because that's what the Gentiles do. Jesus said, I haven't called you to this. And Jesus gives them a totally different map. He says, if you're going to navigate your life, don't navigate it this way. By the way, this is the street in Ephesus, the road that goes up to the top of Ephesus. Down below is the library. To the right, down below, is the Colosseum. The statue here is of Domitian. Domitian was the emperor from 81 to 96 AD. And they found this in Ephesus. It was placed in the highest point in Ephesus. It was 7 meters tall, 21 feet or so tall. So everyone in Ephesus, no matter where they were, knew who was in charge. So that is the leadership of the first century. Now, Jesus says there's a new math. There's a new map. And this new map of greatness is humble leadership. It is a different way. And Jesus just right out says, not so with you. Not so with my followers. You're not to follow the map of the world. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. Not should be, not might be, not it would be a good idea if they were. He says they must be your servant. And so Jesus introduces this wonderful concept of servant leadership. That really when we lead in the world, we're to influence humbly through the relationships that we have, nurturing openness and trust with others. So when you look at these two kind of options, Jesus is showing a different way. I love the quote by Teresa of Avila many, many years ago when she said this. She said, "One must always remember there are many ways of being in a place." So in terms of our influence in the world, in terms of my influence in the world, wherever I am, I can be in those places in various ways. I can be in those places with arrogance. I can be in those places with pride. I can be in those places with worrying about whether people are seeing me, appreciating me, valuing me. And I can play the game of trying to get attention. I can be in places, on the other hand, where I am there with an attitude and mindset, I am here to serve. Plain and simple. I can also be in places where I'm filled with fear. I'm not free. I'm not able to just be myself as to who I am in God. I'm always wondering how people are thinking of me. I'm always looking in the eyes of people to see, are they accepting me, affirming me, appreciating me? So you can be in many places. You can be in a place in various ways. And Jesus is saying to his disciples, I want you to know, I want you to be in the world in a particular way. I want you to be in your world as one who serves. Now, following this event of James and John, by the way, if you go to Matthew 19, so we believe that Mark was one of the Gospels written earliest. The other Gospel writers, we believe, used Mark as they wrote their Gospels to sort of see, what did Mark write about? Matthew writes about this particular event in Mark 10, but intriguingly, what Matthew does in chapter 20 of Matthew is he puts in something that Mark doesn't mention. And it's just sort of a note here. We're told, then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to Jesus with her sons, kneeling down and asked a favor of him. So in Mark, James and John ask a favor. Matthew says, by the way, there's more to this story. Because not only did James and John do this, but Mom took hold of James and John and said, come with me. Because maybe they went back to Mom and said, Mom, we didn't really like what kind of answer he gave. So, okay, come with me. She said, grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom. It's the exact same request. And he says, you don't know what you're asking. And he repeats once again what Mark records here, not so with you. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Those are your marching orders for influence in the world. Serve. Give your life. Give your life away. Then we have the week before the cross. Immediately follows this. And in John's Gospel, John chapter 13, which was read for us during our worship time, Jesus washes the disciples' feet. He gives them a humble leadership tutorial. And it's not a sermon or a seminar. What Jesus does in this particular event is that they are there for the Passover feast. And Jesus, knowing his relationship with the Father, knowing that he was not there to somehow figure out some things from his past or in the present moment secure something for himself or in the future secure something for himself. He knew in his relationship with the Father who he was. And because he knew that, he took a towel and he went around and he poured water into a basin and he went around and he washed the disciples' feet. Peter argues. Peter says, no, Lord, you can't do that. Once again, Peter's mindset is so wrapped in his world that he thinks this is not right. It's not right for you, the leader of a kingdom, to wash feet. And Jesus has to say to him, unless I wash you, Peter, you have no part of me. Peter says, then, not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. And then Jesus says, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes, he returned to his place, and he said, "Do you understand what I have done for you? You call me teacher, you call me Lord, and rightly so. That's who I am. Now that I, your teacher and your Lord, have washed your feet, you also should do as I've done. You should be about in your world serving others, washing feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." Jesus gives them this leadership tutorial to basically once again say to them through action, through example, people, this is what it looks like. So, from this particular passage, what do humble influencers do? Let me give you a very quick kind of way to think about this, John chapter 13, and how it applies to us. What do humble influencers do in the world? Well, they do what Jesus did. They look out. They have their eyes open to what's around them in the moment. And as they look out, they're really asking one question. What is the good that needs doing? And whatever that good that needs doing, you then step in. That's what Jesus did. He just stepped in. No one had to go and tap him on the shoulder and say, you know, you have to do this. He said, no, he just stepped in. And then what did he do? He lifted them up. And in lifting them up, he gave them not only an example to follow, but he basically lifted up their perspective to a whole new realm of what it was for them to be in the world. Jesus is seeking to revolutionize and radicalize their view of life and as well leadership. Now, I want to point out to you that from the first century forward through 2,000 years, leadership has been revolutionized by Jesus. That is, when you take time to look at what it is that Jesus has brought into our world, we now have business leaders who are talking about the need more than ever for leaders who serve. Last week, I came across an article by McKinsey Leadership, the largest consulting firm in the world, and they put forward the need for what they called service leadership. The new approach to leadership, what we sometimes call service leadership, is based on a simple idea. Rather than directing people, commanding people, controlling people, it will be far more effective for leaders to be in service of the people they lead. The focus is on how leaders can make the lives of their team members easier and better physically, cognitively, emotionally. That was unheard of in Jesus' day. Barry Posner and James Coos, who are teachers on leadership in Levy School of Business in Santa Clara, California, wrote a book called Credibility. And they said this: leaders we admire, who are the leaders we admire? He said, the leaders we admire today do not place themselves at the center. They place others there. They do not seek the attention of people, they give it to others. They do not focus on satisfying their own aims and desires. They look for ways to respond to the needs and interests of their constituents, for they are not self-centered, they concentrate on the constituent. Leaders serve a purpose, and the people who have made it possible for them to lead. In serving a purpose, leaders strengthen credibility by demonstrating that they are not in it for themselves. Instead, they have the interests of the institution, department, or team and its constituents at heart. Being a servant may not be what many leaders had in mind where they chose to take responsibility for the vision and direction of their organization, but serving others, these are secular writers. Serving others is the most glorious and rewarding of all leadership tasks. See, this idea of those who are great and that serving others is not a step to nobility, it is nobility, comes directly from Jesus Christ. And it has influenced history for 2,000 years. Now, we still have command and control leadership. You've experienced it. We've all known it. We still have narcissistic and ego-driven leadership. It's around us every day. But you know what? There is something in the human spirit that when we experience that, we go, I don't like that. I really don't like it. That's because something of the image of God in us says that that doesn't mesh with who we are as people. We come alive in the presence of those who are in the room to influence and serve others. So let me close with these final thoughts. And the final thoughts are simply this. What do humble influencers know? Number of things I'm just going to touch on briefly, and then we'll close. But before I do this, I want to point out to you, you may wonder, well, I mean, how does this really land in the environment of, let's say, a business? How does this relate? And that's often what people say, I don't know how the servant leadership thing really can make a difference in my business because I'm in the hard knocks world of trying to make a profit, trying to stay, you know, viable. We've got work to do. I don't think it fits. A number of years ago, there was a man called named Bill Bartman. Bill Bartman started a company in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he started the company out of his own personal experience. Bill Bartman, in his early life, had gone through some pretty rough times. One of the things he said that really affected him was that he was so financially in trouble that he was constantly hounded by collection services. So of all things, Bill Bartman, once he sort of got things together, said, I'm going to start a company. And he started a company called CFS2. I don't know what that means, but CFS2, Tulsa, Oklahoma. And of all things, he said, I'm going to start a debt collection company. Because he said, I know what it's like, having been troubled and hounded by debt collectors himself. He wanted to build a debt collection company that worked differently. In his word, I wanted it to be a company that worked outwardly, with an outward mindset that was based on the following. What are the needs, challenges, and problems of the people we serve? By the way, that's a great definition of servant leadership and of a great servant company. What are the challenges and needs and problems of the people we serve? Rather than an inward mindset that says, we are here to collect that money from those people because that allows us to stay in business. They had better pay their debts. Because if they don't pay their debts, and he said, that's how most companies operate, inward mindset. So he said, we chose an outward mindset. Bill and his company focus on treating those who are in debt with dignity and respect. They operate from the premise that their clients owe them money precisely because they don't have enough money to pay them. Brilliant insight. The typical approach to debt collection and inward mindset is to browbeat those who owe money until you squeeze out of them anything and everything you can. An outward mindset, Bartman said, on the other hand, begins with thinking about these people and what are they up against. Those who take this approach are alive to and interested in the challenge these people are facing, and their mission is to help them with those challenges. And with this, Bill Bartman and his people began collecting debt, not by squeezing money out of their clients, but by figuring out how they could help them make money. So, Bill asked his entire workforce to begin brainstorming, experimenting to see how they could best help. At first, they tried giving their clients advice and suggestions about what to do. It didn't help. They huddled as a team to figure out how they could be more helpful, and one of Bill's employees offered this observation. They can't do the heavy lifting themselves. They are so beat down, they don't have any get up and go left. So, the employees of CFS2 began writing resumes for their clients. They began looking for job opportunities for them. helping them fill out applications, scheduling job interviews. They ran mock interviews for their clients to prepare them for the real thing. And they even began calling their clients on the morning of appointments to get them out of bed early enough to arrive at the job interview on time and in shape and looking good. From there, they began helping in other ways. Any headache in their clients' lives became an opportunity to help. In an interview with Harvard Business Review, Bill Bartman talked about how they get requests now for all kinds of help, from food stamps to child care to home repairs. And CFS2 has identified in Tulsa and other cities a myriad of organizations that exist to help people with these very problems. And they do all of this for free. In fact, Bill rewards his employees not for how much debt they collect, but for how many free services they can provide to their clients. From an inward mindset perspective, this seems crazy. But the results speak for themselves. After just 3 years in the industry, CFS2's rate of collection was 2 times that of any firm in the industry. Clients felt helped by the people of CFS2, some even financially rescued by them, and because their clients have money they didn't have before, they have resources to pay to CFS2. For many, CFS2 has become a partner, even a friend, that they want to pay. So that's an example of a business on the ground that's trying to figure out, how are we to be positioned in the world? How are we to place ourselves in the world? Because we can be in a place as a debt collection service to squeeze out of people everything they've got and to hound them, rather than saying we're here to look at people, to look out and realize these folks have challenges and problems and situations that they really don't even know where to begin. Let's help them with that. Let's serve them in that way, and let's see what happens. And that mindset, as you hear the story, in a very pragmatic way, works. So, what do humble introverts know? Number one, their core identity cannot be found from their world. Big problem with arrogant and proud leaders is that they're ever seeking to find their identity from their world. And it doesn't work because it's always shifting. Jesus' example in John 13 is that John, knowing he was going to go to the Father, knowing that the Father had entrusted to him all things, Jesus was solid in his relationship to the Father, and out of that he was free to serve and get down and wash the grimy, dirty feet of his 12 disciples. Because his identity was not found in his world by way of, this is what Jesus, you should do and not do. He said, I don't care about that. My identity is with the Father. I'm secure in that. And in that I can serve. Secondly, self is a very poor site for finding meaning. Humble influencers get their head around this, that the small circle of self that you can live in is a very, very poor site for finding any meaning and purpose in life. I want to point out to you that from Caesar Augustus forward to the end of the first 100 years of AD, there were 12 emperors, 12 lords of the Gentiles. More than half of them were assassinated. they are a cautionary tale about proud, arrogant leadership. Several of them took their own lives. So 8 or 9 of the 12 emperors in the first 100 years, in the time of Christ and the early church, these were leaders who lived with paranoia, unbelievable fear. Why? Because they chose to be in the place of leadership with a sense that I'm going to control everything. I'm going to command everything. I'm going to be in charge. And they looked around over their shoulder every single day, and many of them died tragically. They're an example that if you want to live for yourself, and we know this is looking at the lives of leadership through history, that those who have been arrogant and narcissistic and they have stayed with that over and over again, in the end, it ends always very badly. Thirdly, the good that needs doing is always nearby. So humble influencers, when you live your daily life and you look out, you know what? The good that needs doing is nearby. The Puritans who settled North America many years ago used to say to their people, wherever you go, ask yourself this question, what is the good that needs doing? And when you see it, do something about it. Just do it. Look out, step in, and lift up. That takes humility, but that is to really enter into something that makes your life so different and so filled with joy. Then, fourthly, position, place, or the prize of applause is not important. For Jesus, he could care less. He was very, very leery, by the way, of the crowds who applauded him. Someone has said that applause and that kind of stuff is like, it's like swallowing perfume. It's nice to smell, but, you know, don't swallow it. And humble influencers know that. Finally, humble influencers know we are most blessed when we are most self-forgetful. You see, when you are able to get your head and heart around this matter of humility before God and then before people, that self-forgetfulness is incredibly freeing. Because you have nothing to hide. You have nothing to prove. You're not in the world to prove anything. You're in the world to be one of Jesus' agents, to do as he did. And he reminded us that we are blessed, not in knowing this, we're blessed when we do it. So that's the challenge for the week ahead. And I would encourage you to simply think of those three things. Every day, look out. And then step in. And then lift up. That's what it means to influence in a humble way.
Thanks for listening in today. We hope you feel encouraged and challenged. If you know someone who would benefit from what you have heard today, please share this podcast. For more information, or if you have questions, you can connect with us through our website, ericsoncovenant.ca. You can also find us on Facebook by searching for Erickson Covenant Church.